Hi and welcome back to another episode of In Our Tech Society. There's a lot of robots or different kinds of machine which do things for us. You can think of an Amazon Alexa or robot vacuum cleaners, there are lots of other examples. People I know refer to Alexa as a she rather than an it, or give robot vacuum cleaners names. My friend has one called Hamish, and there's a reason for that. Robots are, in some contexts, designed to be cute and to trigger empathy. This, though, can be used cynically by companies who want us to buy more of their robots, and it can also be used in a much more sinister way in the context of sex robots. Here is our episode from the archives with Joanna Malinowska on why we should think more about the emotions robots provoke within us. Just before we get started, here's a quick announcement on something we've launched, which is pretty cool, I think. This podcast aims to respond to questions about technology, and we'd love to hear any questions that you have about automation, chatbots, social media, or anything you'd like to hear us discuss. You can leave us a message at the site linked in the show notes, and we'll find an expert, or several if that's needed, to answer it for you. We'll even feature your question at the start of an episode if you'd like us to. I'm really excited to hear what you'd like us to chat about. Anyway, here's the interview. Hi, Joanna. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
How about you start by telling us a little bit about your work?
My name is Joanna Karolina Malinowska, and I work at Adam Mickiewicz University in Poland. In the last year, I began a three-year research project titled Category of Race in the Philosophy of Medicine, Conceptualization and Application of the Category of Race in Biomedical Research and Healthcare, supported by Polish National Science Center. However, we won't talk about it today. Most generally, the subject of my research is a broadly understood philosophy of science, which particularly emphasizes on the philosophy of medicine, philosophy of neurosciences, philosophy of psychology. I explore connections between these areas and questions in bioethics, epistemology, ontology, and methodology. And a few years ago, I became interested in the use of the category of race in science in the context of neuroscience and psychology. I used the acquired knowledge while working in the research project of my colleague, Maciej Musiał, who wrote a great book about intimate relations with robots It was titled Enchanting Robots, as I remember. I started to work for him in his project by analyzing psychological and neuroscientific papers on the relations between humans and social robots. And my attention was drawn to the fact that biases occurring in these interactions are largely similar to those in in-group relations between people. For instance, unfamiliarity homogeneity effect, usually studied in the form of the so-called other race effect. So from this issue, there was only one step to studying the problem of empathy between humans and robots. And this is the topic of our conversation, as I suppose.
That's a really interesting introduction and segue into what we're going to be talking about today. Could you just explain briefly what you mean exactly by in-groups, which you mentioned?
In-groups and inter-groups relations, it's a term from social psychology. When we study interactions between people, sometimes we study them in terms of in-groups and other groups relations. So, for example, if we react to people who are not from our social groups, we react differently than if we would recognize them as a part of our social group. But the group affiliation can change, of course, and there are different criteria to establish this group affiliation. For example, Sometimes it is the color of someone's skin. Sometimes it is an accent. Sometimes it is a social class or a sport group, like, I don't know, football team or something like that. It really depends on the situation and occasion, etc. But I found that it can be easily the research that studied these situations can be easily used in research on social robots. And of course, it is not only my idea. Many people do that.
We're going to get into some of the how we apply that to robots in a second. But the broad theme we're talking about here is empathy with robots. Could you just, I mean, we kind of have a basic idea of what we mean by empathy, but could you just clarify that a little bit for us?
I have to say that this is a horrible question because there are so many different definitions of empathy, and how we understand it, it also depends to what goal we want to use this definition. So in many different disciplines, there are different definitions of science that actually work and they can help us produce some new knowledge, for example. There is some paper written by Amy Copeland, and she wrote that there are like few basic ways that people interpret the term empathy. And there are, for example, caring about someone else, being emotionally affected by someone else's emotions, or imagining oneself in someone else's shoes, or imagine being another person, or making inferences about others' mental state, etc. So there are like different definitions. We can also categorize them as, for example, substantial, functional, and relational definitions, which also differ significantly because they analyze empathy from very different angles. And what is important in our conversation is that while usually we think about empathy in terms of social relations, it is a huge problem for human robot interaction studies to apply this concept without any theoretical issues, because we know that robots are not social agents in terms of like very classical definitions, which interpret social agents as sentient beings with certain social goals, etc. So this is a very interesting problem, because even though robots are not social beings in terms of those classical definitions, still our social ontology developed in the last few years. And we understand that we can actually include non-human beings in this social ontology. And when we discuss definitions of empathy, I think even here we can understand it in a few different ways. For example, we can say that as it is done by, for example, Damiano and Damiuchel, we can discuss empathy in terms of relational processes. So then we have like those two agents, and empathy is a process that occurs there. It's somehow supervene on the this whole situation, on the play of behavioral reactions between two agents. Or we can, for example, discuss empathy in a very behavioral, functional perspective. And this is done in many studies in area of social robotics, for example, because there empathy is usually used to achieve some kind of goals related to robots' functionality. So I'm sorry, I cannot say like there is this definition of empathy and empathy is this and that. There is still huge disagreement about it. In my paper that we are discussing today, in one of them, I was more into relational perspective on empathy, because I was analyzing this situation from the perspective of both agents, both participants of the situation of empathizing. But in other, which was more into one of those agents, which is people, I used different definition. It was a definition of empathy based on Singer's definition of empathy, as I remember. And this definition told that we have to, like, we have few criteria to establish if there is if there is some kind of empathizing or not. And those criteria are, first, our subject is in certain affective, somatic, and cognitive state. The affective or somatic state of the subject is analogous to the state of another subject, and these states may vary in intensity of emotions, sensations, but should be similar in type. A third one is that the state of our subject, affective, somatic, and cognitive, is triggered by observation, imagination, or inference about the affective, somatic state of another person. Fourth is that the cognitive perspective of our subject is aimed at understanding the state of another person. And the final one is that our subject knows that another person is the source of their affective or somatic and cognitive state. So this is actually pretty complex and complicated process.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then just from that, I mean, broadly speaking, your argument is that we can empathize with robots to some extent. Some people on the face of it would think that sounds a little bit absurd. I mean, for example, you mentioned the phrase putting yourself in their shoes. You can't really put yourself in the shoes of a robot. Some people would say you can't imagine what that's like. So just could you just lay out for us what your argument is and why you think we can empathize with robots, at least in some sense?
Of course, I totally agree that first thing about empathizing with robot, the question that appears first is with whom we are actually empathizing with, because of course they are not sentient beings, right? So do we also empathize with chairs, or do we empathize with our shoes that we need to put to the bin or whatever? It's there is this question that somehow is usually connected with a critique of the use of the term empathy in human-robot interaction studies. But yet there are many situations when those relations of human and robots are described in with the use of the term empathy. And this happens in three different levels. One of them is the level of declared beliefs of robot users when they say that they have those strong empathizing feelings to robot. For example, we all knew, most of us saw some clips from Boston Dynamics, right? Where the robots were abused, and we had those feelings that something wrong is happening there. This is also somehow similar to the situation where when we are, for example, watching cartoons. There are those old cartoons about Brave Little Toaster or something like that, and I cried a lot when I watched it. And I think our culture is actually, for example, because we watch those cartoons, we learn that we can empathize and we can feel sorry for objects like the Sad Little Toaster and other, like Wall-E and all of those entities. So first of them is the declared beliefs of the robot's user, and there are many psychological studies into this subject. Another one is the analysis, I never know how to pronounce it.
Analysis
of this problem on the behavioral level. So how people actually react to robots, and how people actually react in the face of robots being abused, for example. Those are the situations like those when military robots are used and some soldiers refuse to use them on the field because something is gonna, I don't know, happen to those robots, or they actually somehow like risk their life to have those robots. And another level of analysis of the situations are the analysis and all the studies of the human reactions on robots on the neuronal level. So studies in the field of neuroscience that actually analyze the activity of the human brain, the specific brain areas correlated with empathy in the when people are facing robots, or when they look at robots being abused. So when we look closer to this problem, we see that first of all, people report feeling empathy with robots. Another one is that when we look on the studies from psychology and neuroscience and from the whole social robotic field, scientists and researchers, they are using our ability to empathize with robots to develop functionality of the robots itself. So even if we define empathy in terms that actually exclude robots as some kind of source of empathizing for people, still we have this problem that manipulation in people's empathy towards robots change their functionality. For example, there are many studies showing that when people think that robots understand their emotions and react adequately to those emotions, they trust them, they feel safer in their environment. They like to spend time with those robots, and they react differently than when they don't feel understood by robots. And it can, those reactions can be changed by many different factors, but the fact that robots are, at the moment, robots are constructed to make us as empathetic towards them is very important in this whole problem. Robots at the moment, in many cases, of course, not everyone, not in every case, but in many situations, are designed, they are designed to have features which make us empathize with them. They have this shapes or voices or names. They react to make us feel that they can somehow relate to our emotions. And this is the whole big deal in social robotics, because functionality of social robots is mainly dependent on how we react and how we perceive those robots, if we actually start to perceive them as social actors. So this is one of the most important research topics in social robotics at the moment.
And then just leading on from that, if those robots are being designed so that we empathize with them, does that concern you in terms of potentially we could be like emotionally manipulated, or how they could be used? Are you concerned about that?
Yes, I'm very concerned about that, because this is how to call it in English. In Polish, we would say that this is miecz obosieczny, so this is like a sword with two ends or something like that. From one point of view, the ability of robots to make us feel emotions towards them can be very useful. As I said, it can be very, it can actually, their functionality can depend on, can depend on them, on it. So if we think about older people that are feeling lonely, and sometimes social robots can help them to maintain cognitive abilities, to maintain some kind of social experiences in very difficult situations. Or if we think about people with disabilities in the similar context, or people with some kind of cognitive dysfunctions, or with in an autism spectrum, which sometimes be in which for whom social robots can be sometimes used in the form of therapists, then it can be very useful. Also, it can be very helpful for education for children, to teach them how to behave in social situations. And in those cases, if we empathize with those robots, it can be a huge plus. But from the other point of view, sometimes empathizing with robots can be very dangerous. And this is the case of military robots. In such cases, each feature of the robots that make us empathizing with them can be dangerous for the users. So we should design them not to make us feel those strong connection with the robot. And we should be aware what kind of features can change it, can features of the robot, of course. What kind of context can change our ability to empathize with the robot, and how it will change it. Another problem is that in some cases, robots that simulate being sentient, so robots which simulate that they feel emotions, that simulate that are in pain or that they need something, and that make us feel strong empathy to them, can be used to manipulate people, for example, for commercial goals. In this case, we can compare robots to psychopaths, who are great when it comes to recognition of people's emotions, as some kind of social robots who are designed to do that, but they don't feel actual empathy. So they can use this knowledge to achieve their own goals. Of course, robots, they don't have their own goals, but they are designed to achieve other people's goals. And we can easily think of robots who are designed as a toys for children, and who make those big sad eyes and say that, oh, please buy me a friend because I feel lonely. So they actually pursue people to make shopping? No. Buy? To buy more stuff. Yes. So to buy more stuff. And we have to be aware that we live in an economic system that strongly maintain that kind of situations and reinforce them. So it can be a danger weapon in the hand of companies.
It's interesting because we talk a lot about how social media companies understand our psychology and are able to use that in terms of dopamine, but we don't really talk about how cute robots, it's a similar application of understanding our psychology and then making use of that for profit.
Yeah, but cute robots can be most dangerous because they grow. Our children grow with them, so they are learning all of their behaviors with those robots, and they can be easily manipulated by it. And of one more thing that I forgot to mention is that empathy toward robots can be also very important in case of education, not only when we talk about toys for children, but also when we talk about robots for adults. And I'm thinking about sex robots and all of that stuff. So we have to ask those questions: how empathizing with sex dolls can change our society, and how lack of empathy towards sex dolls, sex robots can change our society, and this can reshape it, and can also reshape like all our social relations with other people.
It's a really good point, because something that I've heard, listened to quite a few things about, is this concern that with sex robots, men especially get used to treating them like objects and then treat real women in the same way. But what you're describing is a very different kind of concern about not treating them as objects, but treating them as something that we empathize with.
There are two sides of this problem. How we treat robots is strongly associated with all the stereotypes we have, also with gender stereotypes. So for example, there are those studies that shows that the voice of the robot, that people are usually, they're usually more empathetic with robots that have male voices when it comes to the situations when they, for example, ask for some kind of help. And female voices are usually recognized as less serious, less trustworthy. Also, usually robots with female names and robots designed as females, they are robots who are supposed to serve people.
Like Alexa.
Yeah, like Alexa, but not only Alexa, there are those robots who have those, you know, names like Candy or whatever, the sex dolls, robots who are supposed to, when we think of about names of the women, they are usually connected with objects that are used for cleaning or education or care. And men's names are usually more serious. They are usually associated with objects and products that should be more, how to say it, should be more, not trust someone, but you think that someone is serious and powerful and like deserves respect, sorry. So we respect objects and things that have men names usually. And the way we design our robots can strengthen those stereotypes, like gender stereotypes, or can weaken them. For example, by changing those situations. If we design robots not with like rules according to those gender stereotypes, maybe we can somehow shape relations with between genders. Also, when it comes to sex robots specifically, it is a huge problem, because from one point of view, there are arguments that sometimes maybe sex robots can help people with some kind of psychological or psychiatrist problems, sexual problems with their needs. But we don't know that. And from other hand, they can reinforce those tendencies in them. For example, when we talk about pedophiles, and sex robots and sex dolls in the shape of little children. I'm not sure about sex robots who are that's supposed to look like children, but I'm aware that there is a lot of sex dolls shaped as little boys or girls, and sometimes we can. Of course, those are just questions that we don't have answers to, but there is this risk that using that kind of doll or a robot would be just a step into the direction that can be very dangerous for real children. Another thing is that we are shaping our behaviors. We can shape those behaviors. We can shape our social behaviors, as I said before, by using social robots. And if we give ourselves a permission to behave badly towards them, we don't have any idea how it would affect our behavior towards other people. Especially that some of those behaviors, they are just automatic. So if we repeat them in many occasions, if we abuse robots in many occasions, we never know if we won't replace that kind of behavior towards people. In case of women and children and minorities, is especially dangerous perspective from my point of view. But at the same time, too much empathy towards robot. So we can also talk about this problem in terms of like over attribution of robots with some kind of feelings or sentience can be very problematic in terms of development of science, because robots can be very helpful for us. So if we empathize with all of them, then those robots cannot be developed to pursue some kind of functions that can finish with their destroy. So this is a tricky question.
There's a lot of stuff there that was really interesting. I just want to ask you one more question, if I may, which is, I mean, we've got this kind of, it's almost like a feedback loop in that we treat robots like objects, but we also empathize with them. And in treating anything at all like badly, even if we see it as an object, we start to learn some kinds of negative behaviors, which could then be applied in society to real people, which is what we're really worried about. Just generally speaking, do you think if we empathize with robots, I mean, to some extent, that's because the companies have made us want to empathize with them. But does this tell us about something? Does this tell us something about how we should treat the robots?
It's hard to answer to this question because it's very complicated. It is a very complicated problem. I will maybe answer to this in two parts. First part, it would maybe like reconstruct the main aspects of the robot that can be manipulated and can change our attitude towards them. And in the second part, I will try to answer to this question more generally and to maybe say how we should, what can we do in this situation. So going back to the features of the robots that can be somehow manipulated, I think that we can divide them into two basic categories. And first of them is a category of a biological and evolutionary sociocognitive and evolutionary factors, and another one are social cognitive factors. And first of those categories, from my point of view, is very important because it gives us some kind of background for all of our behaviors toward robots. And this is this part that can be easily compared to, when we can easily compare research in area of social robotics to social psychology, for example, because have those concepts that we treat differently different groups of people, as I said at the beginning of our meeting, and our reactions to those people usually are automatic. One of them is, for example, lower empathy toward representatives of other groups. And if we look at this aspect of the process of empathizing, it has a strong evolutionary explanation, because of course for us it was much more dangerous when we had the contact with other social groups, and it was very profitable to have a good relations with representatives of our social group. But this this biological background can be easily manipulated by cultural and social factors. For example, motivation of individual or education or all social context of certain situation. And this is where we can do a lot, knowing that, for example, changing name of the robot can change our attitude towards it, or knowing that some kind of knowledge about its history can change our attitude towards it. It can be easily manipulated, changed, but it tells us a lot about human beings itself, our social relations. So, first of all, sorry, I'm talking very like vaguely about it. I wanted to tell too much probably, but focusing on your question. First, we can use social robots to learn more about people's interactions in group and intergroup interactions, because robots at the moment are not sentient beings, they are not conscious, etc. So we don't have to risk that we will hurt someone if we, for example, show to people pictures of robots being abused. But still, we can check how their behavior, how their social cognition would change if we manipulate robots' behavior, if we manipulate with the context of the situation. This can be very useful for science. So from that point of view, we shouldn't empathize with robots too much. But from the other point of view, and basing on what I've said before, we should think about how letting people be aggressive toward robots can negatively impact our society. And from this perspective, knowing that in some cases people's empathy to robots is very useful, and in other situations it can be very dangerous, we should find or we should, I don't know, develop some kind of rules when our robots should be designed to impact empathy, when they should be designed to somehow minimalize it. And this is a starting point. So we should have some kind of normative and pragmatic frameworks when it comes to designing robots and manipulations with empathizing with robots. But another thing here that should be mentioned is the status of robots themselves, or itself. So there is this huge conversation about robot rights. And in the context of our conversation, in context of our discussion, this dispute is very important because there are arguments saying that robots should have rights, for example, because they can be abused by people and it can impact negatively on our society. Other people would say that no, robots shouldn't have rights because they are just objects, etc. From my point of view, it is more complicated. And from my point of view, the answer should be closely related to that framework that I said before. At the moment, I cannot answer to this question shortly, but I think we could use the idea of a friend of mine, Kamil Mamak, that said that at this stage of our the development of our technology and the development of robotics, we can forbid abusive behaviors toward robots without giving rights to robots. And this is the situation similar to unwanted social behaviors in public. So, for example, we can say aggression toward robots in public is forbidden because we don't want our children to see abusive behaviors toward others and to learn that kind of abusive behaviors. I'm not sure if this is a good solution to the whole problem, but it can be easily used at the moment. So it is not a problem to develop our law as it is, to make it more sensitive to abuse toward robots. Of course, this is just the first step, and more research needs to be done on this problem. But the faster development of robots is, the more we need that kind of rules. For example, there are first cases where automatic cars created some kind of accidents and we don't know who is responsible for that. There are cases of robots that are working as policemen or, I don't know, hostess in a hotel, and the behavior was found somehow disruptive or, I don't know, unwanted. So we need to think through all of that kind of situation, but we need to look at those problems, including the question about empathizing with robots.
That's a really good note to end on, and I really like the idea of trying to ban that kind of behavior without giving robots rights, which seems almost a step too far. Thanks so much for joining us, Johanna. It's been a really great conversation.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening, and if this episode got you wondering about anything, do leave us a question at the link in the show notes. And also check out our first episode on sex robots and Christian ethics, which we released last week if you haven't already. See you next time.